This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, now in our fifth season looking into the exciting happenings of Ipswich Town Football Club. My name is Benjamin Bloom, and for some reason I turned into David Frost for the first three words of that. And you are tuned into the flagship show, available each and every week on video and audio. So, for a sometimes irreverent, always informative hour or more of football conversation, make your Monday a Blue Monday. Hello, good evening, and welcome.
Hello.
I don't do a very good David Frost. Lloyd Grossman was easier. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Woodward.
Morning, Ben. Morning. It's morning for us.
It's morning, so, yeah.
Voices are deeper. I was shouting a lot yesterday.
My Had voice is always beers, very, you know, very manly and deep. That's not true. Now, I'm off to Bristol City today, so we're doing this now. But hey, it will be out a little bit earlier, which might be a good thing. We'll see what the feedback is, Rich. Yeah,
it's a chilled out vibe. I like the beanbag analogy from last time. So we've got the beanbags out, we've got the coffee out as well. So
Nice.
We'll just chill out. It's Sunday morning. We won a game. We'll gradually
hype up. So Richard, you're back on the flagship for the first time this season. Tell us about the preview show, because we gave everyone the news about Harry, and I guess people are worrying what's going to be happening. What is generally going to be happening on the preview show this coming season? How is it different?
How's it different? Let me tell you how it's the same, and then you can work out.
Richard, so, big clue. They want it to be the same.
Guess what, guys? Like the intro music, things change. We already had in mind...
You've mentioned the intro music. You're drawing attention to
it. I'm just trolling. I'd just love to stir it up a little bit. The morning, Ollie Marr. This music's dedicated to you. So I think before the end of the season, I think we'd had a conversation. I'd had a chat with Harry as well about... We knew that we couldn't sustain kind of the big chunky preview anyway, because the source material just wasn't out there. And I was conscious of kind of Harry was putting in the work anyway. And that's kind of obviously kind of a factor behind his decision to kind of just be a supporter this season, which obviously we support, and we obviously wish him all the best and hope that he makes a reappearance, maybe as kind of a, just as an analyst, just to tell us what he sees, because he's always got the expert eye along with the research. He knows his stuff. He's been watching football for years. So all the best to Harry. But we were going to kind of condense that preview thing down a little bit. And I think to your point as well as about our knowledge of League One being not as good as the Championship, I think it was a little bit of us figuring out as we went along and kind of giving our views and analysis and that kind of stuff as well. So it will be a similar format to this show. I think we'll probably have a little bit more of a chunkier review of the game coming up. But similarly, there's a lot of Tuesday and Wednesday games coming up now as well.
Saturday, Tuesday,
Wednesday, Checkatrid, FA Cup. I don't know who that was. That wasn't Mick.
That was a bit more Mancunian.
It was a bit. Oh,
I can't.
But I'm cleaning windows.
All mine turned into Ringo Starr very quickly.
Hello there. Yes, I can do that. Thomas the Tech. This is the Sunday vibe. We're just too chilled out, and this is we need to get this back. So I think I think we'll probably have a chunky preview segment in this show, but we'll have more games to talk about. And also, because we've got a big team, you and I were kind of, I was doing a little bit of a spreadsheet jiggery poker with everyone to kind of allocate the shows and stuff. And we've got instances where all six or seven of us are available, and then Amy might do some Northern Correspondent stuff when later on into the season. And you've got to get all of those people in there as well.
Is that a selection headache?
That is a selection headache for certain days, though. For August, I have the opposite. I have an Ipswich centre-back selection headache of unavailability.
So midweek shows, aren't we?
You're going on holiday. I think Stats on holiday. Dave's away for a bit. So me and Joe will be doing the frequent flyers, I think, on the midweekers. But, yeah, it'll be good. And I think we'll all learn about
James Wilson and Luke Wolfenden then.
No, well, I'm Paul Lambert. I'm the one who's making it all happen. And you guys are like the Marcus Evans who just doesn't want me to have another guy on the preview show or the midweek show. So, no. So I think it'll be good. And I think we'll have a bit more rotation. I think you might chip in for a few of the hosting gigs, and Mike, you might come along as well. So it'll be a little bit more of a consistent offering. And we're not going to try and replace Harry with anything either. We'll try and cobble it together ourselves, but chat a bit more broader maybe. And just a thought, just an extra thing from me as well. Obviously, we wish Harry all the best as well. The one thing that I wish I'd kind of done is a highlights reel of the kind of pre-chat that Harry and I used to have. So we had about 10, 15 minutes.
Did you film that?
I only for the levels to make sure the video is working right. But, you know, Harry was a perfectionist and kind of, you kind of worried that he was putting too much effort into it. So he's definitely deserves the break. But we had so many great chats, just him kind of figuring out how do you play it, Rich? How do you want to go through the team? And this guy, we need to talk about this guy. And yeah, that was the kind of the best bit of the show for me. I just let him go for it in the preview shows. The 10, 15 minutes beforehand was great when we had our little pre-chat, our tactical chat. And then you just unleash him to the world and he did his thing. So hopefully we'll be back on the pod before the end of the season. But certainly, as we were saying, give him a tweet, say thank you. But give him his time and give him space. And hopefully he'll be holding court in the away end at Bristol Rovers as well in March, maybe. We'll see him then.
I went to journalism college in like the year 2000 or something. And we had to learn shorthand. And it was all done on words per minute. And you had to like get 110 words per minute. How many words per minute do you reckon Harry could do at his best in one of your preambles? 700?
Wow. Yeah, and even at the live show, you know, he had meticulous notes and he was riffing off and he was like, yeah, 100 miles an hour.
Riffing.
So, yeah. Well, yeah.
Before we get to this weekend, though, Rich, just talk to me about pre-season, because there's a few things happened since Friday. You were at Notts County in Cambridge, weren't you? Not Colchester, but... What were your feelings just given those two pre-season games and then coming in before press conference and certain transfer stuff that we'll talk about in just a moment?
Yeah, I came away from the games not particularly excited about the season ahead, I'll be honest. I think the thing that impressed me most was Dobra was one of the highlights of it. Norwood, I think you could tell immediately what Norwood was about as well. Holly is someone that I picked out as well. Me and Joe kind of did a jokingly name our Burton team, which was more or less, in personnel wise, was right. But those were the kind of the three things that I'd picked out. Garbutt, it was right. But I think the thing I was looking for was against Notts County and Cambridge particularly, who are teams non-league and League Two, who we should be looking to dominate and boss. And whilst we had spells of the games where we did that, I just didn't see enough of that to convince me that we would go into Burton and be a team to dominate matches. I don't think that's a problem necessarily, knowing what I know now after Burton. But beforehand, it had concerned me a little bit that we'd smashed Colchester. And we then only scored one goal between Notts County and Cambridge.
Interesting. Well, let's move on to this news and then we'll get to yesterday's action at Burton. But before then, ACL injured striker Freddie Sears signs a new deal to 2021. We had one for Dylan Crowe the week before. Did well for Paul Lambert. Seemed to be, you know, in a shower of awfulness. The only player who kind of sort of played to or slightly above his level. I don't know whether there's anything in Lambert and Sears working well together or, you know, everyone else was just so bad that Sears just stood out. thoughts on that decision? And I mean, look, I'm sure we're going to do loads on systems and whatnot and how Fred might fit in with that. But part of the furniture now, and certainly well liked, and seems to have, as we've got worse, he's become more and more important, yeah. Hasn't he? Your thoughts on him being given the new deal to 2021?
Yeah, I that's positive news, and he's flexible, as we've seen. And I think we, certainly you, I think, were an advocate of Freddie's when everyone was saying that he's not up to it, or he's not a forward anymore. He's been pushed out wide, and that's where he should be. And I think, yeah, he grew into the season. Last season, the Reading game, I remember, he was really excellent away. Cracking old Villa as well, that we watched as well from the home end, which is always nice.
What was the XG for that one, Rich?
Wow, exactly right. We bloody love the XG. I think I'm just trolling this morning. This is good. Good decision. I guess my only thought at the time was why now? I know we're looking for positive news going into the new season, but what transpired on Friday in the press conference and the fact at that point we still had a gaping hole at centre back made me think, well, yeah, great. You signed Freddie Steers on a new deal. That's good for him, and he's deserved it. And we need to look after him as well because he's injured. But where's the bloody centre back? Where's the right back? That was more of a pressing concern for me at that point. But overall, a good news, I guess.
Well, one centre back that's been on the move, Richard, is Adam Webster. Maybe we could have joined the bidding war for him. So Adam Webster, ex of Ipswich, off to Brighton for, well, it's undisclosed, but most people are saying 22 million. Just give me your thoughts, because two things really. One, I mean, to be fair, Dave and Joe had this pretty much from the word go that he had a bigger upside than the Championship. I didn't. I can't jump on the bandwagon now and say that I predicted that. Just give me your thoughts on Webster's time at Ipswich. And really, this type of transfer, I know I've done hours ranting about parachute money, but is this the reason why Marcus Evans eventually got swallowed by the Championship? That he never managed to have one of these type players, a McBurney or a Madison or a Webster on his
Murphy,
books for the big sale out. Is this the reason why financially, after 17 years of three teams coming down with 45 million, that Marcus Evans eventually got swallowed? So two things there. Your memories of Webster and, you know, that kind of side of it financially.
So I think you always stick out, don't you, as a ball-playing centre-back, particularly at Championship level.
Even at the top level, Rich.
Yeah, and I think because you get automatically identified as the next John Stones, don't you? And John Stones went for silly money to Man City. We'll park assessment of his career at the moment. But as soon as you are a centre-back that's big and physical, which he was tall, isn't he? He was decent enough in the air, could take a long dead ball as well. Two-footed, I think, as well. I remember you saying at Bristol City away last season, you're watching him doing drills where he was kicking the ball with both feet equally well.
But so pinging it, not just...
Pinging it, yeah. Crossfield passing and all that stuff. And I remember those diagonal balls that he used to play as well. So there's two things there. Firstly, naturally gifted footballer. The question, as you kind of put, is how far do you go? Secondly, the injuries were a factor, I think. We'll come on. Well, you talked about injuries on the last show, didn't we? So let's not open that one up again. But you're right. Going to your next question about Marcus Evans and transfers and stuff like that, the wonder is whether we kept Webster for another season rather than cashed in for the relatively low 3.5 million or whatever it was, would we have got 22 million from Brighton? Well, I suspect we wouldn't have. We might have stayed up, possibly, with better players in the team. But we just feel like we've plucked these lower league players, 800 grand or whatever it is for Webster. And then do we sell too early? I think that's probably a factor. Or do we not do enough to let them realise their value? And you don't know whether it's luck or timing, but we just never seem to do it, do we? And 22 million is a big difference to a team like Ipswich at the moment. It doesn't make a huge amount of difference to Bristol City. You can spend 10 million every transfer window. It just feels that the sale at the time felt a little bit panicky, though you could justify just around if he's only going to play two thirds of the season, maybe. But It's just typical Ipswich, isn't it? Goes off to 22 relief for Brighton. Just a season later.
I just think going forward now that it's changed for second tier teams, and it was always hold on to your players, you know, don't sell your best players. And I even saw one of those things with Jose Mourinho, and obviously he knows more about football than anybody, so I'm not going to question him. And he was saying sometimes the best signing is who you keep, you know, who you don't sell. And I've been talking to like Luton and Barnsley fans, and obviously Luton sell both the fullbacks, Justin and Stacey. I think they got about 10 million. And this is Luton we're talking about, not the great Ipswich Town. Barnsley sold Pinnock and the other fella to Stoke, whose name I've forgotten, but the two centre halves for 5 million quid. And I talk to their fans and say, no, this is actually what you've got to do now, because there's, if you want to get anywhere near, like, sorry to make this Championship stuff, but it does come back to what Marcus Evans has to really do if we get back to the Championship. But you look at Bristol City now, Brentford and Preston, and they managed to bridge that gap by selling at the top. And we've won one game, but if he does get back, literally the only chance, unless you have Norwich or Sheffield United rise, unless you build a team lower down and keep it for a season in the Championship, the only way to really, you know, quote, make Ipswich great again is you have to recycle and sell players at the top of their value and taking these big fees. And it just struck me,
which we don't though, do we? Because you look at Waghorn, 5 million for Waghorn, 3.5 million in hindsight for Webster, too low. You know, this is the trouble, this is the paradox of Marcus Evans, which is we've got a really shit budget. We are not a big club commercially. We've always talked about that. So you're desperate for the money in the first place. You probably try to eke as much out as you can, but I think we set our targets too low. There was no need for us to sell Waghorn last season, was there? And you look at Vidra, who went to 10 million, I think, to Derby.
That was more than that. Yeah.
Was it more? Yeah. You know, comparable players, arguably, in terms of, I know Waghorn had a bit of a one season wonderness about him, but you know, I think we probably sell too low because we are too desperate to fill this kind of budget void. And I think that's what holds us back. As soon as the pound signs start to get Marcus Evans' eyes, you know, we could have held out for, we've held out for Judge, which is probably positive, but Ellis Harrison, you know, if the Paul Lambert press conference is
that's
to be
the next moment on the,
all the, like I've segued into it, but if the money's gone back to Harrison, why don't we just keep him? Do you know what I mean? And now we're in the market for a striker. That's what frustrates me, is I think we set the bar too low to set for the transfer fee. And then we end up having to struggle to find someone to replace it. It's just dumb.
And just quickly, I mean, you've opened another can of worms there. There's two things when selling, isn't there? There's commercial value and there's value to the team. Mm. And the thing with Waghorn was value to the team, when literally all your goals were coming from his set plays or his shots. So, there's value to the team and resale value. But I'm just, you know, that just got me yesterday. And even incestuously in the deal, Brighton take Matt Clark and loan him straight to Derby. Yeah. And I know Pompey developed Matt Clark and whatnot. But anyway, that does segue quite nicely into a very...
When we get on to get positive stuff, Ben? Positive.
We can't yet, because we've got to talk about this ridiculous press conference. So, we know Paul Lambert has been very, very good with his psychology and the way he's... Mick was very good at working the press and everybody outside. Paul Lambert's very good at... I don't want to say he's working everybody, but you kind of have to as a football manager.
He's playing to us, isn't he, Lambert?
Yeah,
that's the difference. Yeah.
You kind of have to. And he's very good, like you said, at working the supporters and the people on the inside. And that's what Harry used to say. Mick kept the dressing room, but lost everybody else outside. And yeah, I hope it's not the opposite for Lambert. So we get to this press conference, and Paul is clearly, his body language is not good. He's kind of he's not looking at Brenner, except when he, you know, slams that knife in and then waits for a reaction. Bit people always have a go at Brenner. He can't he can't win, but he was in a bit of an awkward situation. And
he asked the right questions. I thought that was good for Brenner. I thought he prodded well.
Yep. But Rich, he read it quite well, because it was clear after 2 minutes that Lambert was wanting to get... And this is where I need to watch myself, whether Lambert was A, just telling the truth, or B, whether there was a narrative and an agenda and he wanted to position himself a certain way going into the season. But we came away from this press conference, and I'll get your take on it, but my take on it was that Lambert once again positioned himself as a sympathetic figure to the supporters. And the answer that got me was, Brenner asked about the money, and it was, well, you tell me. Come on, you can figure that out. You tell me.
You bloody know, yep.
Yeah, you know the answer to that. And obviously he didn't say it, but clearly sort of the crux of it was the implication that Norwood's come on a free, Garbutt's coming on loan, Holly's coming on a free, and Wilson's coming on a free, and that he'd identified players that he wanted to come. Just give me your read on, was he just telling the truth, or was this another one of what we think Paul Lambert's very clever, how he positions himself to the fans? Talk about the timing and how you felt about that press conference.
So I'm gonna do a David Diamond answer here in terms of your first bit of the question about was it posturing, or was he just pissed off, or what have you. I think it's a bit of both on that situation. I think there's a bit of chess playing there. I think he's playing a couple of positions ahead. And I got the same feeling for the Judge. Do you remember when the QPR interest for Judge first came in? I think it was after Notts County, perhaps. And he said
Judge wants to go.
Judge
yeah.
wants to go. And to me, and I put this on Twitter as kind of a little bit of a joke, but not 100% joke, the conspiracy theory that basically what Lambert's doing there is preparing us as supporters that Judge is going to go. So he's basically said, look, I don't want to sell him. The club don't want to sell him. But Judge has kind of knocked on my door and said, look, Gaffer, I want to leave. I don't want to stop it standing his way, because he's off to the Championship. He's in the Ireland squad. So it's probably the best thing for all. When actually on paper, it's like, well, this is a guy who could tear up League One for us, be really important, and we don't want to let him go. So I thought that was kind of doing the kind of preemptive PR campaign post-Judge if he was to go. And I think this is a little bit for me, either got out of bed the wrong side in the morning, or got a parking ticket or something, or a speeding fine or something, didn't have his coffee maybe before the press conference, got in there, was a bit pissed off anyway. Maybe I've had a meeting with Marcus Evans either the day before or the morning before, and has been told
Evans was there on the Friday, Rich,
and I think he was there yesterday as well, possibly, wasn't he? Maybe there was a meeting yesterday on Friday that didn't go well, but I think potentially there's rumours that Dazell didn't travel, why that's about. So there might be, we have to sell to buy. He did say that in the press conference. So this is warming us up to the fact that someone is going to go, perhaps. Or it's, look, I've got the supporters on side. Come on, Marcus, get your checkbook out. I need a right back. I need a forward. Sort it out. And I think it's possibly playing to that. So possibly a little bit pissed off, possibly posturing for something. And in terms of how do I feel, having seen Notts County and Cambridge and being underwhelmed, and after last season where we couldn't win a game, it wasn't what I needed on Friday before the start of the season to get up for the new campaign. I was a little miserable on Saturday. I sent a message to you guys, didn't I? I sent a message to my mates as well and said, I'm not up for this. I'm usually really excited. It's like, no, I'm not fancying this. We've got a weak team. We've not spent any money. We've lost all last season. This is going to be a long, hard slog. So it didn't do anything to help me out in my mood, Ben. I don't know about you.
No. I mean, look, if he'd come out and been kind of disingenuously overconfident, we'd have all said, oh, well, you know, calm down, mate. It's just strange because you've got three managers that have been there in the past, whatever, 2 years. Two very big names, one not big name. And they all seem to have... It just doesn't strike me as a club where you can just not have to deal with this nonsense. And you have Mick on the one hand, who, very big name, very big personality, who protected Marcus at every level and took the fall himself, to the extent of his relationship with the fans, and you know, have your view on that, who's paying who and whatever, is that right or wrong? Then you have Paul Hurst, who's not a big name at all, who did similarly...
He kicked off in August, didn't he?
Yeah,
he
did kick off before the season. Kicking off in a different way, but went for the players, arguably who... He did get the money that made.
But he did say that he did say it was slow doing transfer business before the start of last season. He did come out in the press and say that, and it's taking too long, or there's something about being down here or whatever, the geography is an issue or something like that. I remember Hurst getting the excuses in early.
This is the thing. I'm not saying Paul Hurst wasn't a miserable failure, but when you look back at some of the quotes from Paul Hurst now in context, a lot of them actually make some sense, you know, and have been borne out. And then you've got another big name, big player, big personality.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And again, it's nonsense that you're kind of having to talk about and clear up. I just find it very strange that obviously the common denominator seems to be the owner and the speed of transfers and the budget and all of this type stuff. So, I agree with you. It's kind of not what you wanted, but I kind of like the attitude of because he basically said, well, I don't care if you sack me,
and this is it. He can
I'm
whenever
not bothered, you know.
We know that he's done it before. He will if he's not happy, he'll leave. We know that he'll do that, and that, I guess, is my worry, is that we start the season quite well. We're maybe hovering outside the playoffs in January. He asks Evans for £1 million to strengthen, to get us up. And it doesn't happen. He goes, right, I'm off. I'm gone. And
well, this is the issue, Rich, is that the better Lambert does, the more stroke he then has with the supporters and the more empowered he might feel in his brinksmanship with the owner. And
well, it worked, though, didn't it? Yesterday, the away end, first 10 minutes of the match, there were two anti-Marcus Evans chants.
We'll talk about them in a bit.
It kind of worked. It was almost like Donald Trump and the send them home or whatever, you know, that it just, you know, it brings out a little bit of a siege mentality. And as we say, it's kind of the opposite. It mixes it. Siege mentality with the fans, which is, come on, Marcus, get your checkbook out, mate. And that's Lambert. He's just got us to do the work for him. You know, he can say what he wants to the press. If we suddenly do the messaging for him, it gets the job done. I'm not accusing anyone of being a Trump supporter, by the way, he chants an Evans chant just to get that disclaimer in there.
But we believe in freedom of speech here on the podcast. If you are a Trump supporter, then fine, you know, whatever.
Good for you.
Good for you. Right. I must just address this, Rich. I guess people are going to want to come and listen today, and we are now about to talk about our win and all this optimism. We do have to address these things. They did happen, and you know that was the story yesterday, and we can't just ignore it. And we are now going to talk about our 100% winning record. So, Rich, off we go to Burton. I kind of owe you an apology, but I don't really, because you guys that get the train always, you always end up miles apart from me. So I landed my car in my just park. What does Mullet call it? Car park Tinder. In my,
is it?
In my just park spot.
He was on good form yesterday, Mullet. He's taking legal action, by the way, about the question, his questioning or his...
I like his line of questioning. Yeah. That won't stand up in court. No chance.
Oh, exactly right. It was a compliment, Mullet.
Absolutely.
Take it as a compliment.
Yeah, absolutely.
He asked a good one this week, by the way, but don't read that out. Don't feed the troll.
So you take legal action over that. Yeah. So yeah, I'm like 1 mile from the stadium this way and you're the other side. So I didn't get to catch up with you yesterday, Rich. But we were both there among with loads of Ipswich supporters there. All the pubs along the road.
Or something, yeah.
Full, yeah. Ends up with 4,000 in the ground and probably 30-40% of them possibly Ipswich fans. So we've had these chit chats about systems and about personnel, and
Dave Diamond an apology, is this it? Is this the beginning of the 4-4-2 apology, Ben?
No, absolutely not. No, I made it very clear on
all good.
That.
All formations are good. Even,
I said,
equal.
I can't win the argument against you until we have a pattern of play and fullbacks and centre midfielders that can work that formation. And I said, and you know, you can clip this out of the other podcast, there is a scenario that you stick your best players out, you go 4-4-2, you stay solid. And it turns out that's exactly what we did for 35-40 minutes of this game. Anyway, so Lambert goes 4-4-2. Let me give you the team and you can give me your take on the great debate. And I'm sure we've got lots of questions on how it's actually going to play out when all the players are fit. So Holly in goal, Danasian right back, Wolfen and Wilson centre back, Kenlock back in at left back, Rowe orthodox right winger, Downs and Skews, Garber orthodox left winger, clear midfield four, Norwood, Jackson up front. Rich, most people had the personnel right. It really was just a case of the shape, wasn't it? The more you boil this down, the more this just revolves around Caden Jackson and whether and how you use him or not. But talk to me about the team and talk to me about the system.
I had a Spidey senses moment at about 11 o'clock yesterday, and I thought we'd go 4-4-2 purely because Judge and Hughes, and we, as soon as I knew Dizel wasn't travelling either, it didn't seem to me that where there was enough fit midfielders to do to have five in there or a two and a three. So I thought he would go for the strongest possible 11, which meant starting Jackson. And so that was my logic.
Protecting those centre halves in this first game, Rich.
Yeah, and it's a tight pitch at Burton as well, so he can afford to be quite narrow. I thought he would go with that, and I think that was a sensible thing to do. In terms of the personnel, there's no arguments there, is there? That's probably as good as we can do. No Emmanuel on the bench. So that is that the end of him? Is he off on loan somewhere maybe? But otherwise, there's no complaining about that. The central midfield pairing is solid. If I'm spectacular, though, Downs had a... We'll talk about Downs. Yeah. Bloody hell, dropping the shoulder every few minutes.
There's one you want to hold on to, yeah.
And whether Rowe and Garbutt work as a kind of in a four or not, I think it worked okay yesterday, but they're required to do more defending. But I thought it was logical.
You're totally right. I think and I think the reasoning, Paul Lambert just did the most straightforward, sensible thing, didn't he? Protects the two centre backs. You're trying to bring Hughes back gradually, so you don't expose him. Dizel's not around for whatever reason, I was just going to make another point and I've completely lost it. Judge just doesn't quite fit in a 4-4-2, does he?
No.
That
makes a little bit
sense.
Of matching up to Burton, perhaps. And this is a theory that I'm going to test throughout the season as well. It was one of the questions I think you had in the midweek pod. is I think we'll change formations based on the opposition as well. Yeah. I think if we think we can win, I think we'll go two up front.
Yeah, the football purist in me says you pick a formation and you work the hell out of it and you become a better team. And this is going to be a theme about today's game. Sometimes you win a game because you're a better team. Sometimes you win a game because you have better players. And yesterday was very much you win a game because you have better players rather than necessarily being a better team. And this 4-4-2, we're going to learn very quickly. This wasn't total football. This was squeeze up, protect the centre halves, transition quite quickly.
Yep.
Try and get Mr. Danny Rowe one-on-one with fullback. Try and get Jackson on the shoulder and try and get Norwood. It was about getting those three players one-on-one.
Early balls up to Norwood, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it wasn't, okay, let's build out from the back. Let's go out to the fullbacks, into the centre and, you know, what in my dream and in my heart I want to see in the long run. But, hey, I want to see us win. So Lambert got it right because we won, but you might be right that it might be one thing, one game, one thing, the other, and that might be fine. And we shall see.
I'd expect 4-2-3-1 next week.
Oh, there you go. Well, so, and I'm sure we'll delve into that later today and on Wednesday. So Burton, O'Hara in goal, Brayford right back, O'Toole and Buxton centre backs, Daniel left back. And here's where here's my big issues with the 4-4-2 and you getting outnumbered. So Quinn sits in front of the back four and Edwards and Wallace quite tight with him. And this is my worry to all the people that go, two up front's great. As this devolves between minutes 40 to 55 or whatever, that's where you lose out in 4-4-2. You get a tight game and you get outnumbered in that key area in centre midfield. Fraser he's off the front, Rich, but he pulls left quite a lot when they realise we're a straight 4-4-2. And
I thought it looked like a 4-4-2, so you're saying they moved around
cope with our width. Yeah, I just thought Edwards and Wallace were tucked really close to Quinn, and I think their plan was to be tight, but as soon as we were wide, Nigel Clough's not stupid, is he? They had to kind of react to that. And I thought the intention was for Fraser to be closer in, but we pulled him out when we were on top. And then when they were on top, he could come in. Yeah. And it was Akins and Boyce. So they played a front two. You know, I get the Twitter comments already coming on, but they played a front two. Ben, how are they dominating in midfield? Context is all, isn't it? Bit of a shaky start.
Can I just quickly, really quickly, in terms of context for the win, in terms of League One understanding and all that kind of stuff, Burton will be top half almost certainly this season. You're looking through the team. O'Hara, known from United, Brayford, Sheffield United, Cardiff Derby, John Joe Tull, Watford, Colchester, Northampton, he's been around. Buxton, bloody centre-back, lumbering, huge centre-back, Derby and Wigan. Stephen Quinn in midfield, Sheffield United, Reading, Hull, and Akins and Boyce. Decent strikers at League One level as well. So this is not they're no mugs, as Mick was saying.
And this is an absolute classic of what to expect, isn't it? Some experienced players, you know, your Stephen Quinns and your Buxtons, who, not necessarily in the prime of their career. The prime of their career might have been up a level 5 years ago. Useful League One strikers, kind of bustly League One strikers and youth players is basically what you're going to... You're not going to get very many 24-year-olds, you know, in the prime of their career swaggering around. You might get the odd one, but bye-bye to them in January.
There for 3 months, yeah.
Yeah, to Brentford for Preston or whatever, 750 grand. I say Ipswich started shakily. I thought Danasian was a bit nervous, but with this 4-4-2, they did impose themselves, and I thought they were the better side... you know, just in terms of intensity and pushing on, Burton, try and get the press going. But Ipswich nicely up the pitch and hitting the front guys. And 11 minutes, I was sat there thinking, 2000, 2001, I was sat in Tottenham, first game of the season. And in an absolutely brilliant season, Ipswich take the lead after about 11 minutes with a left-footed deflected goal from Mark Venus. And I'm like, can I draw a parallel to that?
We're going to finish fifth. Come on.
On the Take me through this goal then, Richard. Ipswich take the lead.
So this is where the predominant threat came down the right-hand side. So it's a nice kind of aggressive run from Danny Rowe. There's quite a lot of those in the first half. He lets it off to Downs, doesn't he? There's like a little back heel or a step over or something, falls to Downs. And Downs takes the ball forward here to the edge of the penalty area, gives it back, I think, to Garber. I think he's got a chance to hit it early, doesn't he? Takes it across his man and gets a shot off, and it's a clear deflection. We can see it from the away and total opposite end of the pitch. But the thing is, it's a direct run from Rowe. Downs gets involved as well. You think Downs is more of a central sitting, aggressive, combative midfielder, but Saturday, he was part of spreading the ball out wide as quickly as possible. When the ball wasn't going long and direct forwards, he was making things happen and turning the ball over. And I thought he was important here. The question is whether it's a deflection off O'Toole or Rowe on the way through. And I think it's off O'Toole rather than Rowe. But I think he probably had a chance to hit it early, or Rowe had a chance to hit it before he then gave it to Garber. But I think you mentioned it on your video review. Hit it early. That's part of the jeopardy that, you know, Waghorn used to prey upon last season. And yeah, fantastic start. The away end's going crazy, and this is all looking fantastic for us.
And this, in terms of the strategy, was how it was going to work. Because I think even before that, I think Wilson steps out, gets it out to Rowe quickly. And I like Danny Rowe. He's got one trick. Ooh. But if you can get him on the ball, I must admit, I'm so biased about this. I prefer him in the half position a little bit closer. That's going to be way more dangerous than... Yeah, a little bit further back or a little bit wider. But that one trick, if you can get, could be lethal, couldn't it? Just get him the ball one-on-one early, run, come inside, go, run. Ooh. If you lose the ball three times but you make a goal every game, you know, that'll do for me. So I think there's going to be... we'll talk about Danny Rowe at the end, but a lot of people ready for him to get a run in the team. And that's what it was. We're not talking about Mick, two lines of four here and just booting the ball into the channels when we say. They were trying to be quick in transition, which I think is different than keeping a low block and booting it down the pitch all game. And for this first 30 minutes or so, it worked well, and that was the... and if David was here, he would say last year that would have bounced out and Burton would have got a counter-attack.
Yeah, or, people would have got something on it. Yeah, absolutely right. But there was definitely our share of luck yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, there is something to moving the ball quickly, hitting it early, people not in positions. And nice for... I don't know who will end up with the goal, whether, if it did bounce in off...
Give it to Garber. But as you say, I think the key thing is that it wasn't aimless punts into the channel. You know, we were passing the ball to get it to feet for Rowe to break through there. There's a few instances where, yeah, of course, when we countered really quickly yesterday, I think we'll talk about the possession stats maybe. It didn't look good on paper for us. But actually, because we were so incisive when we did get the ball, I think that was okay. And I think probably away from home, that's how we'll go about it. But it wasn't just humping it into the channel and hoping someone runs onto it. It was
those possession
directed.
Stats are really going to help us understand the two styles, though, because I bet the possession 4-4-2 is very different to 4-2-3-1. Is very different to Alan Judge being on the pitch.
Well, yeah, so it was 35% at half-time, I think, and it was 45% in the second half, and Judge had been on for 25 minutes.
Oh, okay. All right, stand corrected. So, a couple of things. I mean, you've already preempted it. One brilliant counter-attack involving a Peter Schmeichel-esque claim and throw out to Norwood and switch of play. Just talk to me a bit about Kenlock, because I felt I was a little bit hard on Kenlock. We all want Kenlock to do well. Harry from Bath would say they targeted him and he gave away 3-4 fouls where he would give away the foul and you'd see him look to the heavens and go, oh God, they did me again. I know I was in the wrong place for that. And then one moment where he gives away the foul and he turns his back on the free kick and they play it straight through to Brayford. Yeah. Just talk to me quickly about Kenlock in that first... Well, Rich, in the period from 20 to 40 minutes as the game transitions a little bit towards Burton.
He got wrong-sided quite a lot, didn't he? My theory is he's just not fit. You know, he hasn't played too many pre-season games. That's all I put it down to, really. He's not... I didn't think he got a massive amount of help from Garbutt necessarily in front of him, nor did I think Wilson shifted over to help him a little bit.
Aikens moving across, and Aikens is a big lump who knows what he's doing at this level.
Big unit. I think it was made, in hindsight, maybe if you get Kenlock another preseason game, I think he'd have been a bit sharper yesterday. I think that's all I put it down to. And maybe, as I say, a little bit of unfamiliar personnel around him, perhaps.
I hope you're right about that, because it's just one... I think he grew into the game. I didn't think Danasian started well either. But
he was nervy.
Yeah, but
got better.
I just think you've got to go with these fullbacks now and, just see it through. I mean, we've been hoping for a long, long time. But 26, this actually becomes a key moment. James Norwood just running around, pressing, presses Stephen Quinn, draws a foul, yellow card, and this is... English football fans love strikers who run around and press and steal the ball. Norwood's way more than that. But a clear instance yesterday where already had a big impact on the game. Norwood's pressing. Talk to me about Norwood's... But was he trying too hard? Did Steve say in the chat?
Yeah, a little bit. I think there's something in that. I think he obviously wanted to impress. But I think if he's not going to get the chances, and he didn't get a huge amount of sights yesterday, then at least he does something else. He doesn't go missing. He'll try and create stuff for himself. I've got a mate who lives in Burton, who's a Liverpool fan. He was sat in the home end yesterday, and their fans hated him. They absolutely hated him. When he got booked after about six, I remember the referee pointing them out and going,
he
had one more after that, and then he got his booking, and their fans were booing him after that. So at least he plays for us. He'll get the chances. I think he's a known quantity now, which I don't think works for him, but Buxton was fouling him all over the place yesterday. So I don't think that helped. But
six of one, half a dozen of the other, we may say. Yeah,
blue tinted spectacles there.
But he draws the yellow card, which is going to be key in, I'll do a diamond again and say, if this was last season, the guy doesn't get sent off and we draw that game 1-1, they score some kind of equaliser at the end. So there we go. Bits and bobs for Ipswich. All counter-attacks, really. Rowe on 33 comes in and shoots, which I like to see him do. A bit of afters, yellow card. We showed good discipline, I think, because in all the gnarly things, it was Burton players getting booked rather than Ipswich players getting booked. I thought the game, as we came up to half time, I thought Burton were on top. I thought we started well, and as the half went on, that switched over. The possession stats say they had most of the ball. We had the holy slice goal kick and Kenlock heading it back into play rather than letting it go out and finding his position again. But I'm not piling on Kenlock. That said, though, reasonably comfortable, would you say, defensively, Rich, if not for the territory?
Yeah, this goes for the whole game, pretty much up to about 85 minutes. They had a lot of the ball. I think we were quite happy to let them pick because we were quite compact. But we broke really incisively and quickly. I think we had more shots on target than them. I think we had more attempts on goal than them, despite not having the possession. And I'm okay with that. It didn't make for enjoyable watching. But I thought we deserved it at half-time. I thought we deserved it full-time, frankly. There's going to be games where we just let other teams have the ball. We score early and we just sit. And that's exactly what it was first half.
Just quick mention for the Wolf as well, because there was one moment where he ball flat across the floor, going in on the goal. He's facing the goal and he's in the right place. And, that's got own goal written all over it. And there's going to be another even better one at the end. Burton, nice snap to their pressing. As they come out from half time, a big chance here. Holy, who I think we're all impressed with, flaps at this one, and Aiken should score this one, shouldn't he, Rich?
Yeah, I'm trying to. We didn't start the second half at all. It took us about 15 minutes until I think we changed it. It just didn't work. I don't know if that was Burn being up for it. I can't remember any particular chances, though I know we were under pressure quite a lot. You might have to tell me a little about
it. It was that one for Aikens where Holy flaps and. He takes two touches and just blasts it over from.
Yeah, the box. He tries to go for the corner, doesn't he? I think.
I think he should score.
Just get on target.
For that. Norwood finally gets himself in the book, and you say 15 minutes. I've got 53 minutes when the system actually changes, when Stuart Taylor and Lambert come out. They are...
Jackson moves over, doesn't
Yeah, they are getting swarmed here. So, and this 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1 thing will run. So Lambert reacts. They're getting outnumbered. They're getting outpressed. So Jackson goes over to the right. Rowe goes into the 10 position. Garbutt is the left. Norwood's... up top on his own, as people like to say, but this system looks far more suited to deal now with the way that Burton are playing and dominating the midfield. Downs takes yellow on 57. Some nice football on 61. Jackson with a diagonal. You would have had a better view of this than me, Rich, because I was in the cheap seats on the side. Lovely touch off by Norwood. Garbutt feeds it through. I thought Norwood rushed this a little bit. He's in behind and he kind of slides at the ball. I think he thinks the keeper's maybe a bit closer.
I think that's it. I think the keeper comes out quite quick. I think that's what puts him off. So I think he has to take it early, which he does. He gets his shot off, but he stabs it wide. Mm. And probably if he holds it, maybe take it around the keeper perhaps. But he also goes to ground, I think. Yes. So I think the ball might have been in front of him a little bit. So he has to try and get a boot on it. So that was close, though. That was the first proper sight of goal, I think, for either of the teams, ignoring defensive foul-ups by us.
Mm. Judge comes in for Jackson on 61. So Rowe goes out to the right-hand side of the 4-2-3-1 from the 10 position. Judge goes in the 10 position. Again, Nigel Clough's not stupid. Immediately sticks on Broadhead to kind of match that up. And it's more now 4-3-3 against 4-2-3-1. Rowan Judge, nice combination here. Garbutt's shot deflects, but it goes wide this time. Another nice counter from Ipswich. Garbutt away down the left. Norwood wants this, just played ahead of him, and Garbutt puts it on the roof, although I thought Garbutt was good. And then Rich on 77, Norwood's pressing in the first half, gets its reward because Quinn should know better here. Slides in from the side on Garbutt. Garbutt makes sure the referee sees that he's been fouled. And red card. And did you breathe a little bit easier then in terms of us seeing this out when that red card came out?
A little bit. My favourite bit of it, and I saw it again on the telly to make sure, is Quinn does the old chestnut of, I got the ball, ref, I got the ball, even though I came through
knew.
The man. He was gone. He was a goner. Yeah, that did make me feel a little bit easier about the situation. But this is Ipswich, you know. You never know. And I won't spoil it, what's coming up. But
yeah, right. Wilson's got cramp. So, in theory, he will be available for Sunderland. But Emir Hughes comes in. We're all waiting to see if Skew's going to go right back and Danasian go centre-back. Skews goes centre-back.
Who called Skews at centre-back on the opening day? Come on. I got abuse for that. That was a joke.
Skews, our 18th choice centre-back, ends the game at centre-half here. Yeah. Judge, free kick over the wall, easy save. Sarkic comes in for Akins. So fair play to Clough. He does try and leave three up with 10 men. Which
this is the Akins sub, sorry, is the first instance where I've seen the player having to go off at the he has to walk in front of the town fans to go off the pitch, Akins, which
it's going to take
a longer walk to avoid the away end, but
going to take players a while to get used to that. And speaking of getting used to something, here comes the horror moment. Defending a 1-0 lead and playing with 10 men. So it's all very relaxed. All put your foot on the ball, keep the ball. But what does Thomas Holy do, Richard?
So my mate Dan behind me is getting apoplectic because our supporters are doing the Olays at 1-0 away from home. There's a general relaxed mood. Holy takes about what feels like 20 minutes to set his feet and to hoof the ball forward or to try and find a pass. And in that time, is it Boyce who closes it down and gets the foot in front of the ball, deflects back and is maybe a matter of, it's a foot or two wide, isn't it? And that was the wake up, but probably we needed to finish the game out because I think maybe we were getting a little bit complacent. And Matt Gill, like my mate Dan, is apoplectic in the stands. He kicks over the water bottle. The lid flies off onto the pitch and he's sent off for some kind of ungentlemanly conduct or what have you. But not a good moment. But again, the luck, we've talked about the luck.
What would David say? Last year, that would have spun just inside the post, wouldn't it? Hey?
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, but you're right. Wake up call. Lambert does have a good word with him and, you know, says, use your head, mate. You know,
I thought Ollie started the game really well.
I like Ollie. I'm really behind him.
He shanked out a goal kick onto the side of the pitch. And I think from then onwards, I think he started to worry a little bit, I think.
But in the main, it's a very different experience watching Holly to Bart. We know Bart's like an expert shot stopper, but Holly properly comes out and, you know, batters about and punches and catches. Yeah. And
Good few low saves as well. I get sound quick for a big man. That's a nice cliche. I thought I'd get that bad boy in there.
There you go.
His kicks are huge though, aren't they?
Yeah.
He'll get an assist this season. Prediction.
Well, Bart got one at Reading last year, didn't he?
True. Yeah. Holly might score. He might get a windy day.
He might score two. Jose Chilavert. There you go. Judge yellow card on Daniel. He goes off injured. El Mazzuni comes in to row just to try and keep the ball in stoppage time. But there is a big chance. There's a chance for Burton at the end. Corner swung in. Big header at the back post. And there's the Wolf again. Reads this, it bounces, and he's on the goal line.
Yeah. Easier for him to score an own goal here than to get it clear, I think. That's impressive. He's in my top three players yesterday, Wolfenden. Yeah, I'd be really gutted if he doesn't get a chance next week, actually, with Chambo.
So, Ipswich last out. They get the win. It's all very strange, isn't it? Coming away competitive in a league, winning a game, holding out.
Getting the luck. Yeah.
Getting the luck. Yeah, very, very strange after last season when a lot of the times you were going kind of resigned, you know, knowing that you were relegated from about January the 1st onwards after the Millwall game. Have I got this narrative right then, Rich, that he played the 4-4-2 for the reasons you suggested? We started well, scored when we were on top, ceded possession and played on the counter. Burton were taking charge of the game, but Lambert was tactically flexible and reacted nice and early and didn't let it go. We then had more control of the ball when the system changed and particularly when Judge came on. The red card put the game totally in our favour, and the key moments, as in the two Wolfenden clearances, the Holy bounce and the deflection, the key moments kind of went our way. Have I got that right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and I think we deserve the win. Barring the two foul-ups at the end. And I think you're right. At the start, you kind of talked about the personnel. I don't think they had anyone as good as Rowe out wide. I don't think they had anyone as good as Downs in central midfield. And Aikens and Boyce didn't really have a huge amount of threat about them either. So I think combination of the tactical stuff you talked about, the luck going with us, systems being changed at the right time, but the personnel probably being a level above. And I think this might do for us. I think expect quite a few of these type performances. I think.
Yeah, and do you agree with my thing that you either win because you have better players or you're a better team? I think Burton are probably better drilled than us and know their jobs. Mm. You know, they've done a whole season in League One. But I totally agree with your point. I think possibly we just had better players. And thinking about Rich, the two big chances were Holy not quite getting across and Aikens missing. And not that we're down on Holy. What I'm saying is they came from
us.
Came from us, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. I don't know what to say. I had a really, really profound point there that I've forgotten, Ben. But
that'll be me talking over the other person again, won't it? Hey?
That's fine.
Shall we go to the Twitter questions? Because I'm sure we can summarise players and whatnot. Because we'll probably get asked about them on the.
That was it. I know there's a question about it. Don't worry. I think it's Mullet's question, which is a brilliant question.
Oh, there you go.
We'll
see if that one comes up. How are we doing? 57 minutes. We won't do too many of these questions. Shall I scroll to the bottom or to the top? Chris Hodges, is the lack of possession a concern for the forthcoming games?
not if we counter-attack and not if we score early, which is what we did as well. I think that set the tone. We didn't do that against Cambridge and then struggled. Get the early goal. I don't think possession's a massive problem, but I think we'd all prefer us to manage the game a little bit better by keeping the ball. But if we're going to break and score on the counter, then it's less of a worry.
And I think if you... I don't know how you get Hughes into that team yet, but if Hughes and or Judge in that team, and if it's the extra man in midfield, I think the possession stats go up. And when you're not playing away at Burton, who are a solid side, it's that classic one, isn't it? What led Five Live, this is Justin, to report Skews being sent off just before the 40th minute?
There was a Barney, wasn't there? There was another like Cambridge-esque shoving match.
Oh,
and I think one of their players got, was it Quinny got booked?
No, number four. That would have been Edwards got booked. He was quite good, Edwards, wasn't he? With the top knot.
Well, the man bun, yeah.
Quite neat and tidy on the ball, wasn't he?
Yeah. He took their set pieces as well.
Yeah.
I think they thought Skews had a part in that, but he was not sent. We can confirm for the people watching at home or listening at home, it wasn't enough.
Nick R., was that press conference a big publicity stunt designed to create a different conversation away from finishing in the top two and thereby taking pressure off the team?
Yeah,
a conspiracy
probably
theory.
So. Yeah, like that. Yeah.
James Parker, and I don't think he's being facetious here. Are we the best team in League One on average? I assume he's talking about player for player.
With our injuries sorted out, yeah. I think we'll be up there.
That's worrying, isn't it? Harry Marcham, does Lambo need to turn down the comments around managing fans' expectation? Comes across a bit negative and, quite frankly, is a bit of a vibe killer.
I think some of the comments are going to be Marmite, aren't they? And some people are going to be up for it and then galvanised and shout at Marcus Evans and what have you. And some people, like me, will go, oh, I don't need that, Lambo. Can you just keep your counsel a little bit? I think we'll get more of these guys. I think just try and keep a level head.
Just quickly, Rich, just talk to me about this chanting. And again, I believe in freedom of speech, so people can chant what they like.
Within reason.
You know when you go and watch Leeds and they go Pablo Hernandez and then it turns into Kiko Casilla? Is Paul Evans... Paul Evans? Paul
wow.
Lambert. There you go. Paul Evans.
Did he play for Rotherham?
Brentford? Yeah. Thanks for bailing me out of that one. Is Paul Lambert is a blue, he hates Norwich. And then this Marcus Evans is a... I'm not going to say it. See you next Tuesday. Those two chants aren't going to join and that be chanted constantly, are they? Because
I hope not.
Yeah,
I hope not.
I don't really see the positive in chanting that you're... I believe in freedom of speech, but I guess that might class as hate speech.
Yeah, I think calling someone a C is probably not freedom of speech, perhaps. But
yeah.
It comes back to Lambert and kind of the PR campaign that he's on. If he gets money out of it, if it puts Evans under a bit of pressure, but then there'll be people... I had someone on my Twitter account when I posted about Marcus Evans getting his checkbook out or, joking about with Jeff Fars about when Paul Lambert asked Evans for money, the reaction gifs or whatever.
Paul McCarthy.
Someone like that. He played for someone as well, didn't he? Sheffield Wednesday. People say, well, Evans puts in loads of money anyway, and do you want to be the next Bolton, Bury, Blackpool or Coventry? Probably not. So there's two sides to it always. We are, as I think Guy called Geraint on Twitter as well, has always said, Ipswich Town fan being split on something. Never heard of it. Who would have thought, So there's always two sides to it.
I just
isn't
don't want that. In the same way the Leeds guys, it's now a double chant.
Yeah.
Pablo
if
and
we keep winning, though.
I don't want it to, because I love the Paul Lambert thing. It's always nice to see fans chanting for their...
But if we win, it won't matter, will it? I mean, this is it. If we get...
Fair.
Yeah.
Essex Rich, surely Wolf should retain his place in defence once and Ciala is fit. How do you see the centre halves here? Wilson, Wolf, Toto going to be back later in August. Chambers going to be back next week. Going to be Chambers and Wolfenden next week? Although you'll do this on Wednesday, won't you?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I think Wolfenden was excellent yesterday and I thought he was excellent when he last pre-season as well and Blackburn on the opening day when he came off the bench.
Who was the senior figure in that centre half? Part two. What was your read on who was calling the moves?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Skews didn't have a huge amount of the ball yesterday. It was one of those jobs for Skews where he's just there to mop up. And I wonder whether he had a little bit of a direction role there. But Wolfenden seemed to be the most assured, didn't he? Wilson, I think, still new to the club. I thought he was fine yesterday, Wilson.
Yeah, I like when I see players win clever free kicks, you know, and he did a.
But both of them good on the ball as well. I thought Wilson pinged a few early balls out wide as well. Wolfenden took the ball forward a few yards and ran with it as well. So I'd like to see him start next week. I'd like to see him given a chance. If he doesn't do anything wrong, if we keep keeping clean sheets, you wouldn't change the team, would you, too much? But
I don't want to general. Ruin your Wednesday show, but James Houston, I don't know what I'd say to James Houston if there was a problem, but... how likely do you think we are to play 4-4-2 against Sunderland next week? Just touch on that slightly and then do a bit more with Joe on Wednesday.
I don't think so. I personally, it's a fair shout. Maybe you go with the winning team consistency and stuff, but I think Judge will probably be fit now enough to start. And I think if you're going with your strongest possible 11, I think you'd have Judge over Jackson purely because I think Judge is the focal point for everything. And we're a little bit more dynamic, keep the ball a little bit better with judging the team. So that would be the reason to shift it around for me.
Quick one from me, because I'm hosting the show and I do what I want. And
do what
I'm,
you want.
I'm a renegade. I'm like Statman. When will Hughes play 90 minutes?
He needs to...
Next year?
He needs to keep playing more and more sub-minutes, doesn't he?
But then we did that with Bishop really nicely last season and he's still injured now.
I hope October. He looked decent, Hughes, yesterday. He looked decent at Notts County. I think he played most of the game, Notts County. You forget what kind of player he is. He's one that can take the ball forward. There was a jinking run, didn't he, in the second half yesterday.
He's a good championship player. Let alone a good League One player.
Agreed.
Jack Barham asks, who was the standout player? He says it was Rowe for him. Standout player.
Rowe, I agree with that. Downs, though, for me. Yeah. Downs for the footballing side of the game. We know that he can do the grunty stuff. We know he can get his head in there when he needs to. Wink. But I thought yesterday was great. Central midfield, so many times he just let the ball come across him and turn on it and started the ball out the other side. I thought Downs was excellent yesterday.
Do you agree with my pre-season comment? Downs is our number one centre midfielder now. It's Downs and one, or given Skews' later years and might not play every minute and Hughes' fitness, Downs is the man, isn't he?
And as you said, he's probably got the most League One minutes in the team, isn't he?
Yeah. Andy Nichols, happy with the win, but concerned about the future of Paul Lambert. I think we've covered that there is...
Yeah, he might walk if he wants. He's not got anything to lose. He's not an Ipswich guy, is he? So, yeah, he might walk if he doesn't like it.
Nick R, will Judge stay or go? Is that done now?
I think someone else needs to come in for him rather than QPR, doesn't it? I think that's the only way it would happen.
Benjamin Aria, first football game you ever attended? Can I do mine?
Go on.
Was Ipswich 0, Wolves 0, 1989. But if I do the second one, was either Ipswich 1, Oldham 2, or Ipswich 0, Oldham 2. And Ian Marshall scored both the goals, and Oldham went up with Joe Royal. That was probably 19...
Nice.
Would that have been 91?
192?
They got promoted 90, 91.
I was at two promotions.
Because they had all their cup run. They got to two cup semi-finals in 89-90, but that was a bloody good team, that Joe Royal Oldham team. Earl Barrett.
John Holworth
Mick
in
Milligan,
goal.
Rick Holden. Yeah. John Holworth in goal. Marshall up front. Remember big Roger Palmer as well?
No.
Huge forward. I'll have to look him up. Joe Royal Oldham team. Sorry, your first game, Rich?
Yeah, my first game was a 0-0 as well. It was Liverpool in the FA Cup at home.
Oh, wow.
Was it January?
Me on players
91
there.
Or 92, I think.
Yeah, Ian John Rush, at the bar, Dean Saunders. The header. Yeah.
Yeah, and then that was the one where the replay was 3-2 at Anfield. Oh. That was my first game.
There's like 20,000 Ipswich fans at that replay, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great. I love that epic. That's the
Gavin Johnson. That's unstoppable.
Stat and Dave love that one. The limbs behind the goal for the second.
It's
for
ridiculous.
Johnson. That's great. So that was my first game, Ben.
Dommy Boy, 79. How good was the Wolf?
Yeah, good. Yeah, we talked about him. I'd happily see him continue in the team.
Nath, will the win today encourage Evans to keep this no-budget approach? Or will... Lambert's words in the press encourage Evans to spend a bit.
We will see, won't we? We'll find out in the next few weeks. The good thing is we've got a few more weeks of the window than the Championship, I think. So
can I play complete arsehole devil's advocate? Is there not an argument that Marcus Evans can go, look, Look at that squad.
Look at them.
Look at the squad.
Start with them. Look at those injured players.
Go and get promoted.
Yeah.
Is there an argument that you can't do that? I've already given you Hughes and Judge and Edwards and Sears.
Look at him. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, yeah. Yesterday didn't help. Should have lost yesterday. If you want more money, Lambert, you've got to lose matches.
What
rather
is
than win.
Wrong with him? It's a good name.
Toto Enciala. Start with him.
Did you see the banner at Reading yesterday?
Brilliant. Yeah, I tweeted that. I love that. Yeah.
Guilty. Okay, here comes Mullet's question. Shall I ask it?
It's a good question.
It's a good question.
It's a good question. Equal.
Was the biggest positive the depth from the bench? And I'll add to that. That's probably going to switch around, though. These guys will become first in place. Talking about Hughes coming on, Judge and El Mazzouni.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I was Dobber on the bench as well? I thought Dobber was probably maybe a better pick for the right side, but El Mazzouni is probably more advanced. Yeah, Judge certainly just settled us down. Hughes also gave us a little bit more of attacking threat. I totally agree. And it comes back to the personnel on the pitch, but off the bench we can change it as well. So if we find ourselves chasing a game or 0-0, they'll be, yeah, get used to games being 0-0 for about 70 minutes, by the way, guys and girls, and then us needing to do something different. I think I quite agree that we've got the players firstly to settle things down, but to change it. You could bring Rowe off the bench for a time, couldn't you? Or Dobber or Mazzouni. Yeah, I quite agree with that.
Super Friends asked about the Sunderland game. We'll keep that till Wednesday. Adam, was both of your full-time responses yesterday to check championship scores, realising that Sheffield Wednesday's win at Reading. Yeah, and wait for the next segment, Adam, where we're not going to talk about Forest, Derby, Reading, Sheffield Wednesday, and we're going to talk about...
Let's talk about Rochdale. My first reaction, by the way, was to look at the Sky Sports app to find the video at about 6 o'clock when I was on the train home, and it wasn't there. Yeah. And then this morning I went to look for a match report, and there was about four paragraphs, and that was it. So,
maybe that would be good for our content here. Hey? I'm going to ask two questions in one here, because Harry asks, are we getting a bit carried away? And then the next tweet, beautifully, is Glory Days artwork saying, if we get promoted, should we have an open top bus parade? So read into those two tweets what you
will. I saw Harry's question. It's an interesting one, that, isn't it? I don't think there was a huge amount of getting carried away yesterday. I think there was a lot of people just delighted that we've won a game of football, which we couldn't.
We're competitive, Rich. Yeah, we haven't been competitive for an entire year, and we go and win an away game. And at this point in time, we are competitive in this league. So as a football fan, I can turn up rather than just being frankly detached and watching and, you know, looking at my phone thinking I can get into the actual competition rather than just be an observer.
And open top bus parade? No, not for League One. Sorry.
Yeah, dude. God, did you hear?
If we get to them in May,
and
we have to ask
Purslow. We're like, no, we're Aston Villa. We don't do a parade for getting promoted to the Premier League. So yeah. If we're Ipswich Town, yeah, maybe. BJS73, Dazelle injury, which I think may be bull. Lambo gets the Dazelle money. Would you sell or not? Well, let me give you a different question, Rich. Sorry, BJS. I have to add the S there. I feel comfortable with saying BJ.
As long as it's not BJS69 or something like that as well.
You've got to stop right there. What number would allow you to sell Dazelle then? And bear in mind, take 2 million off for that to be Marcus Evans' number.
Yeah, at least we haven't got to give some money to Portsmouth or something like that. Yeah. 5 million. Because we don't need to sell him, I don't think. And if it's to them lot up the road, then it should be an extra 2 million on top of that as well, because they can afford it. And they just it just feels to me like they can sign him, so they will. It's a prospective signing rather than them needing to put him in the first team, because he'll be loaned out if he goes to Norwich.
So basically, from that number, you're saying you wouldn't sell him then, because no one's going to bid 5 million to a League One.
Unless we've got a right back lined up who's 2 million quid, let's say, and that would be a waste of money anyway. So we need a right back, I think, and maybe a striker. I think the most we'd need to spend for those two players at League One level to get what we need is probably £1 million for those two players. So we've just got money in from Webster's sell-on, for goodness sake. So it just seems to me, unless Dazelle wants to play at a level above, hold out for more money.
Mm. once I got offered a gig in Middlesbrough and I didn't want to do it, so I quoted an exorbitantly high price and then they said they'd pay it. So then I did the gig.
Should have added another note on. Yeah, how high would they go?
That's what we need to do with Dizelle, isn't it?
I want Benjamin Blue, but I'm not going to take no for an answer.
Well, you're going to pay for it. Are you ready? Apologies to the people who didn't get their question read out, but what I will say now is the shows are earlier recorded on Wednesday night as opposed to Thursday. So Rich will do a shout out for the questions on Wednesday. So even resend the same question.
I might even look at the Sunday thread and pluck some of the ones we haven't done as well. So
pluck. We're going to be very honest here, Richard, as we always are on the pod. We don't know very much about League One because we've been in the Championship for 100 years. So here comes the first roundup of the season. We're not going to pretend we know stuff when we don't. So we'll just go through, and I think Richard's done some notes. But early leaders, Peterborough 1, Fleetwood 3, despite all of the nods towards Peterborough being your dark horse, you personally, you're slagging off me personally.
What?
Peterborough lose to Fleetwood, Rich.
Yeah, well, Fleetwood are a dark horse as well, aren't they? Three signings with the goal for them. Goal! that was poorly. That was a technical glitch, everyone. Fleetwood top of the league. Good for them. Alan Ball.
Oh, what a player.
And Danny Andrew free kick, was it, I think? That was a decent goal. I think they're for the third. But Peterborough, weird, aren't they? They're like, who are they like in the Championship? Let's do that game.
Derby.
Who spent? Yeah, Derby, that's it. Flattered to deceive.
Derby, but score loads more goals, yeah. Blackpool 2, Bristol Rovers 0. So Blackpool up there to begin with. Lincoln, who are going to be a menace, I think, whatever league they're in with those Cowley fellas there. Lincoln 2, Accrington 0. National loses Bolton Wanderers with their minus 12 points and their no players go off to Wickham and lose 2-0. Richard, what date are Bolton going to reach 0 points? Are we doing
all that?
Sorry, I'm being very disingenuous and we should not joke. About this because we want Bolton to reach 0 points because there is that horrible scenario. But
it sounds like the takeover is getting closer, but it just keeps dragging on, doesn't it? And the longer it gets towards the transfer window, the more at risk they are. Three senior pros.
Well, they're definitely
one of them
going to get relegated.
Makes a mistake, isn't it? Yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I think they might take them until maybe November, December, perhaps, at best. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, not good.
There's a theme here. We haven't gone through all of the games, but Lincoln certainly, that game, set pieces, bloody hell, goals from corners yesterday.
No, really?
I don't know if you're going to talk about Wimbledon Rotherham anytime soon. Three goals in that match, all from corners.
I had Tranmere losing at home to Rochdale. Rochdale 3-0 up and nearly chucking it away at the end. Wimbledon 1, Rotherham 2.
Oh, some wrestling move by Hepburn Murphy in the Tranmere game, by the way.
Oh, really? What is it?
They scored
a rock bottom or a stone cold stunner?
It's a
choke slam.
It's a Paul Ritchie from Bolton in the playoffs.
Oh, okay, that's a choke slam then.
But they've just scored Tranmere, and someone's grabbing the ball to run it back to the centre circle.
Tedious,
and it kicks off, and then Hepburn Murphy drops him to the pitch. Very stupid.
And the law says delaying the start of play is the offence. So, it's the other teams that just don't get involved. Silly football players. Wimbledon 1, Rotherham 2, you've mentioned. Rotherham will be good. And even in the Championship, they were very good at getting a free kick 5 yards inside their own half and creating a goal scoring opportunity out of it.
They've sold, haven't they? But it was Ladipo who scored 2 goals for them. 18 last season for, look at me doing my research. 18 goals for Plymouth last season in League One. He scored 2 yesterday, looked bright and sharp. So,
and they cashed in on Ajayi and Volks as well, didn't they? Cov win, I assume that was at Birmingham, was it?
Also Birmingham, first game at Birmingham City. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to call this out every week. That's a travesty that's happened for a second time, and that's a bit of a disgrace. But good on Cov, who've a team that I'm interested in, obviously, living up here. They've sold four of their got bright prospect players. Bayliss is the most recent one. He's gone to Preston. Sunderland have signed a couple of them as well, and Chaplin to Barnsley. But 1-0 win yesterday, and Jordi Huilo is the person to look out for next. Nice goal from Zane Westerbrook. Sorry, I'm new, trying to read my handwriting. I don't know this off the top of my head.
Shrewsbury yeah, good on one, Pompey nil.
What a goal! Everyone tells me
Pompey are going to be amazing, and Shrews beat them on the first day.
Yeah, great goal as well. Have you seen it?
No.
Have a look. Watch the AFL question.
This is when I'd normally be doing my prep, isn't it? My own fault. Doncaster 1, Gillingham 1, Sunderland 1, Oxford 1. I'm sure you'll delve into that more on Wednesday. And so sadly, MK versus Bury postponed. So we have straight away in this division, we have Cov playing at Birmingham. We have two teams on minus 12, and Bury and MK haven't even started yet. So, well, in an attempt to try and keep the shows a bit shorter, we won't do any fun and games here. But hey, Aaron, a quarter in. So, Rich, tell us what you're going to do on Wednesday with reference to the Sunderland game.
So, yeah, we haven't got a midweek game to talk about. So I think it's Joe on with me on Wednesday. So I'll get his views. He was watching that game from abroad.
From Kazakhstan,
Kazakhstan. I'll get his take and stuff. I think we'll probably look at, we'll get his views on Wolfenden, I think. But we'll probably take a look at Sunderland from last season and figure out why it didn't work out for them. I've kind of alluded to it with the draws. But yeah, we'll just get Joe's take on things and we'll ask more of those questions, I think, and anyone else that's got some. But maybe we'll kind of take a youth angle to it and get Joe's views on Wolfenden and Downs and Dobra and El Mazzini.
And you can decide once again what system we're going to play, which we're going to end up doing every game this season, yeah. I think, aren't we? Thank you very much for watching and listening. It's nice to be back on the flagship show. You can follow us at Blue Monday ITFC. This will come out on YouTube and then audio should be out nice and early this week. Bear with us while we figure out what we're doing with the preview show and how to balance this out. Any suggestions, tweet them to at Blue Monday ITFC, or I'm at Benjamin Bloom. Rich is at Ips Rich. And remember, it is possible to make a suggestion without being a prick, isn't it? We will listen, but don't be mean when you make a suggestion.
You're wrong, and I hate you for being wrong. Do it this way.
Especially about Richard's intro music that I think's lovely, Richard.
Yeah.
Excellent theme tune.
Just remember that it took me ages to do it, and I actually did it. I mean, I didn't play all the instruments. Not to pretend that, but I did spend the time to do it. So what you're slagging off potentially is someone's hard work and effort. Yeah. You may not like it, but it doesn't make it crap or bad. It's just different opinions. All welcome.
Yeah, but we'll figure it out going through this season. The podcast is like the universe. It's constantly expanding and
right,
evolving. And we'll find that
it's massive.
What's the song he plays on? Things can only get better. There you go.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, that's a message to leave the pod on, isn't it, surely?
New Labour, 97. Education.
Britpop.
Education. If you want to be my lover. Well, it's not Britpop, isn't it? It's just Spice
Girl
Girls.
Power.
Yeah, give me their sales figures any day. Richard, say goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone. See you on Wednesday.
Bye, everyone. See you next weekend.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.